Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Jumping Monkeys would like to thank CashFly for the bandwidth for this podcast. CACHEFLY.com. CashFly. This is Jumping Monkeys with Megan Maroney and Leo Laporte. Episode 45 for May 10th, 2008. Dr. Ruth Ann Russo. Jumping Monkeys is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook and a whole lot more, visit audible.com/monkeys. And now, visit Audible's new kids site, audiblekids.com. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations.
It's time for Jumping Monkeys. Jumping Monkeys. And here she is, ladies and gentlemen. I call her Priscilla, but her real name is Megan. Megan Maroney. Hey, baby, you going to eat that sandwich over there?
It's smelling good, actually.
It's good,
yeah.
We'll have a little bit out there. So.
Thanks for having me in your cottage.
You like it?
Yeah, I do like it. I like that my view is of the Oxford English Dictionary.
Thank goodness you appreciate that.
I do appreciate it.
You know why that's here?
Because I'm the only one that would appreciate it.
For you, baby.
Yeah.
It's because you're the... You know, I bought that. I love that. It's the... For those who don't know, it's the kind of the ultimate dictionary. It has supposedly every word ever used in modern English, plus its etymologies and, you know, when it was first used and all of that. And I bought it a few years ago because I just thought, oh, this would be a great thing to own. And the kids will love this and... You know, they'll use it for their homework. We also have a leather-bound World Book Encyclopedia. And another stunning example of anachronistic purchasing behavior by yours truly. But, I mean, because all this stuff's online now.
Right.
But, and the kids never looked at the World Book. And worse, you know, yet, my wife felt that the OED and its 23 volumes, can't understand this, what is it, 13 volumes, were taking up valuable... space for knickknacks. So she put it in the garage.
Oh.
When I found that in the garage, my heart just broke.
And now it's here with
us. Now it's here, and the World Book's in my trunk. So after the show, if you wouldn't mind, let's bring it in.
Excellent.
Isn't that nice to look at that, though? I think that's so
cool.
It
is.
And if anybody needs any etymologies, we'll leap up and we'll get those.
Yeah, I think at the end of the show, we should open it up and pick a word, and then next week we'll talk about that topic.
You want to do that?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, today we're going to talk to Dr. Ruth Ann Russo. She... has several degrees. She's a lawyer. She also has a degree in public health. And she wrote a book called Seven Steps to Your Best Possible Health Care. And we thought it would be good to have her on to talk about how to keep your family's health records together, how to talk to your doctor, how to choose a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be interesting. She's a really interesting one.
This is couldn't be a more interesting time for healthcare. I mean, patients really have been empowered by the internet and the technology. And of course, technology changes healthcare.
Right. It really does. Yeah. It's interesting because I have the big Kaiser healthcare and I love having everything online. And, you know, you go to the emergency room and they know what your kids are allergic to and everything. And you give them a card and that's how they know who you are and everything. And I needed to get some health records from my old doctor. And it was funny because they always seemed so unorganized there. Mm-hmm. And I went in and it had been a year since we switched and I needed Annabella's records. And I just walked in and I said, you know, I need her records. She was like, hold on just a second. She went, dug through some paper and she gave me her vaccination form. So I was like, I didn't tell you her last name. She was like, I remember you guys.
Oh.
So like that's
see,
the flip side to it.
An
you know?
HMO doesn't have that kind of personal touch.
Right.
You might see a different doc. But you do see the same doctor, don't you? And you do kind of get to know
Yeah. So that's the flip side to it. But I don't feel like I lose that in the new, you know. And
I'm very happy with it. Yeah. Dane won't go near it.
Kaiser.
Mm. Yeah. That's why he's only got one leg. They took the wrong leg off.
We're very familiar with Kaiser. This weekend, actually, we made our second trip to the emergency room. Milo hit the corner of the wall and bled everywhere, and then they glued it.
How many times have you been there now?
Four.
In three years?
4 and 3 years. Yeah, I've never been to the emergency room with Annabella.
Knock on wood. Jennifer and I were just thinking, neither of our kids has yet to break a bone or have a serious, again, knock on wood. Aren't you glad I got a fine wood desk that you can knock on? We'll be knocking on that a lot in the future.
Yeah, so I also forgot to say Happy Mother's Day. Today is Mother's Day.
Jeez.
Or when you're listening to this, it might already be past Mother's Day.
I gotta go get a gift. Again, with a sneak up on me on Mother's Day. Could you wish us Happy Mother's Day the week before next time?
I will.
Again,
well, I did
you sneak up
actually
on
wish it to you the week before. So,
you did?
Yeah. Remember I gave you the e-card?
Oh, yeah. I gotta pay
it
more
was so
attention.
Long. It was a week ago, so I can understand how you cannot remember that.
What should I get? What's a good last-minute Mother's Day gift?
Massage gift certificate.
Massage. Mm-hmm. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Great choice.
Yeah.
I think I'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And later in the show, we're also going to talk to Jeremiah of Z Recommends. He is going
to... Hi, Mara. I'd like to order a... Oh, I probably shouldn't. Hold on. I'll call you back. Thanks. I'm just going to order a massage right now because it's getting late on Mother's Day.
We're going to talk to Jeremiah of Z-Rex, and he's going to tell us about some homemade robots that he and his family has been making. They've been harvesting parts of old toys and making...
They were making grape harvesting robots.
No.
They're out now harvesting.
They haven't been harvesting organs
vineyard.
Either. No. So let's get right to it because Jeremiah's going to be calling in pretty soon.
Uh-oh.
And Dr. Ruth Ann Russo is also going... She's not Dr. Ruth.
She's not... I was all excited.
No. All right. Each week on the show, we talk about one way to spend your money, one way to save your money, and one way to give it away. Kind of an idea of, you know, if you give a child a $3 allowance, it might be nice to teach them they could spend $1, save $1, and give $1 to charity.
I think that's a sweet thing to do.
The first is spend, and this is not that expensive. I got this suggestion from Parent Hacks. I know a lot of kids like to draw or write stories, and it's like everything is on loose paper, the art's right. everywhere and everything. And what they suggested was getting a notebook for their kids' art and story. So every time you go somewhere, you know, here, just draw in this like notebook, and then everything's together in one place.
I am proud to say that we have done that many times with the kids, even Henry, who really isn't that artistic.
Yeah.
We like to give them notebooks.
Yeah.
We really like to do that.
Do you like the moleskin? Do you pronounce it moleskin?
Moleskine. Believe it or not.
I don't believe it. I've heard you pronounce it that way, and I don't believe
it. It's Moleskine.
Because there's no E at the end, isn't there? Is there?
There's an E at the end.
Oh.
Moleskine.
Moleskine.
And the reason you pronounce it Moleskine is because it's foreign.
It's
foreign. It's from a foreign country.
Foreign.
Foreign. It was originally... they're these beautiful...
So they're not actually made of mole's skin.
They're not made of mole's skin. They're not mole's skin. They're Moleskine. If you can Wikipedia this, but it was made in Italian.
Uh-huh.
It's Italy. They're not leather. Mm-hmm. They're paper, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Those black bindings with paper inside. They're beautiful little notebooks with a little rubber band or elastic that goes around, you know, your page like a
right,
bookmark.
Yeah.
And they make them in all different sizes.
Right.
They were sold classically in the French bookstores, and many, many mm-hmm. authors are famous for using them and writing on them from the turn of the century on. And then they were discontinued. So I think a company in France has brought it back.
Oh, I just like the rubber band. I think that's...
Oh, great. I just think they're great.
Yeah.
Moleskine.
So do you have the notebooks?
One year, I went Moleskine crazy. And I bought Moleskines for everybody in my family.
Uh-huh.
I bought lined ones. I bought unlined ones. I think I bought a diary, you know, day by day. They never used any of them.
Oh, gosh. You're always raining.
I just got some of those, too.
Oh, look at it. Z-Rex. Hey, Z-Rex, how are you?
How are you doing? We just bought some Moleskines, too. I got one of these cool ones. It's like an accordion fold, all one big piece of paper that folds up into the little booklet.
Oh,
I haven't figured out what to do with it yet. You could do like a, you know, a history of Western civilization or something in it.
You know what's cool about them? It's like Picasso used them to sketch in. I mean, you could say, here, kids, you know, Van Gogh used this. You know, famous writers used them. I mean, I think they're really... I love Moleskine. So I think... I'm thinking it was Italian, and that's why it's Moleskine. But then the French sold them, and anyway, it's a long story.
So you agree with the pronunciation, Jeremiah?
He said Moleskine.
I've never thought about the pronunciation. I always thought it was Moleskine, But I don't know. I thought they were French, too. I didn't know anything about an Italian origin. But
I don't know if it's Italian origin and the French make them or the French origin and the Italians make them. I think it's I don't know. You know what? I'm going to go to Wikipedia and find out.
Well, while we have you here, Jeremiah, why don't you tell us about your homemade robots?
Okay.
I think that's so cool. You make robots?
Well, we're talking serious, serious basic robotics here. And that's what's been so fun about it for us. I have no background in this stuff. I don't really have an interest in getting that involved in I mean, I don't do anything with circuit boards or hardware, can't fix my own computer, none of that stuff. We're basically just taking motors and putting appendages on them, and we harvest these motors out of old toys, and then we sort of dress them up and anthropomorphize them and decorate them, basically. My 3.5-year-old daughter, you know, gets real excited about how we can sort of accessorize them and make them into these little creatures.
So what is the draw? Yeah, I know you have a drawing robot.
Yeah, we have a drawing robot, which I found originally on some website that was crediting it to some high school science group or something for coming up with the idea. But we modified it. We made our own. Basically, you use all of the robots that we've made are based on using a small motor with an eccentric weight, meaning that it has a little pin that spins, and that's what the motor does. But then there's a weight attached to that pin, which is off balance. So when the pin spins, the motor vibrates.
Mm.
And that's the way the motors work in most infant toys, you know, that you pull a string or you flip it on or something and it shakes. That's how those work. It's just a little motor with a little weight that is off balance, and when the motor is activated, it makes the whole thing kind of shake.
So essentially the toy is vibrating itself to death.
You could look at it that way. But these things, they live on and on. You can either... Some of them are wind up, you know, depending on the toy. It might be wind up, it might be pull string, it might be battery powered. So when you pull the motor out, you know, you're going on this, you know, you're sort of, it's sort of experimental to get inside this old toy and figure out what's inside.
Yeah.
And that's fun for a little kid too. You know, you're sort of breaking the sacred barrier, and you have to be very careful about it, that they're ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a toy that they're willing to part with. And when we started this, I sort of had my eye on this this little vibrating sort of crawling caterpillar that our daughter had from infancy, because it's a baby toy basically. She would never let me do anything with it. Imagine that. It's this little stuffed animal, and I wanted
Daddy,
to, you know,
you can't take a caterpillar apart. It's not allowed.
But she we finally found a toy that she got at a garage sale and really didn't care about and didn't seem to work very well. And that was just a couple months ago, and when I suggested to her that we take the motor out, see how it worked, and make a new toy with it, was the way that I phrased it. She was very excited about it.
That's different. To make a new toy.
Have you seen Toy Story? Has she seen Toy Story? Because isn't
the
scary... You've never seen Toy Story?
We'll make a new toy with it.
That's what, like, the scary neighbor does. Yeah. He, like, harvests the motors out of other toys and, like, you know, he's...
Makes creepy robot toys, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's basically what we do.
So don't show it to her. She might not want to do this anymore with you.
the motor that we got out of a bee movie. You know, the bees, mm-hmm. little bees. I don't know.
You it's killed a pun on Jerry movie, Seinfeld for this toy?
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld. Yeah, I never saw that movie either. But she had some little toys from it, and we got a wind-up motor out of one of them. And it has a little eccentric weight on it, and that's what we made the drawing robot out of. We made it out of 3 markers that are used like tripod legs that we attach to a plastic cup and sort of hung the motor up on the inside. And I made this sort of fancy little hole that I sort of doctored up to make the stem come out so you can wind it from the outside, but the motor's on the inside. And you just take the caps off the pens, wind it up, and set it on a piece of paper, and it sort of dances around and draws on the paper.
Oh, cool. Oh. And the other two robots?
Well, after we did that...
She, really cool. I
she was
this.
Raring to go with the doing the surgery on the little caterpillar toy. Once we had that first toy, once we had our first one done, she understood.
Again,
she
Daddy,
really
again. Make the toy dance.
So we tore apart the caterpillar, and there was another eccentric weight motor inside, but it's a pull string toy, so we used baling wire and electrical tape and made some little legs that sort of hang down from it. So it stands with the motor suspended about an inch off the ground on these 4 little legs. And then we went real crafty with it. We had a small gourd that we painted and attached to the top. And then on top of that, you kind of have to see this to believe it, but there's we cut off a head of a rubber ducky and attached that to the top. So it's this sort of, It's kind of like a snowman, but it's pink and it has sequins and glitter on it. Anyway, that one, you pull the string and it sort of skitters around on the floor or on the table or wherever you are. Then, just as a final phase and my final recommendation, basically I've described most of the materials that you need to make any of these. The only extra thing was I put masking tape all over the drawing robot so that she could paint it. It's a nice way to be able to paint on plastic. But the last one, we decided we were really getting serious about this, so we went to Radio Shack, and they have whole drawers full of different kinds of motors and LEDs and, you know, battery packs and stuff like that. So we got a little 9-volt powered motor and little battery connectors for it. Basically, a little piece of plastic that has the two contacts for a 9-volt battery and then a couple wires going off it. And I got a little button, like a little push button. And, you know, it's just a basic circuit. You just connect the little wires together, tape them up, and I put the battery and the button in this, in just a little plastic box and connected that with a wire to the motor. And we made another little toy with more of those little metal legs and used that motor that just is, it's just a tiny little motor with a pin, and we stuck a wine cork on it, offset, so that it's the eccentric weight. And when you push the button on the power supply, this little corded robot, it's sort of like it has a little leash, like a 4-foot lead.
Uh-huh.
It sort of dances around and jumps and flips over and stuff like that.
See, if I made something like this, it would just kind of walk in a circle and then fall over.
Well, then all you do, they're fun. One fun thing about them is they're so, they're really, you know, it's sort of a random process, you know, and sort of an inspired process to put them together. And so if it doesn't do what you want, you adjust the legs, or you add weight, or you take off weight, or you shift the, you know, you increase the weight of the body or decrease the weight of the body, or you add sort of soft pads to the feet. We added some little pom-poms to the feet, and it sort of muted the dancing so that it would stand up.
This is probably a good thing.
There's all these little things you can do to it, you know, in the process of sort of tweaking it that can make it act like you want it to.
It's probably very educational for a kid. You're learning about the real world, physics, and so forth.
Yeah, she's really not. I don't think she really gets. I mean, she understands that a battery provides power for the motor, but, you know, electricity, all that stuff will come later. But certainly for us, the fun right now is just the concept of making a toy in and of itself, you know, even without a motor, is something that, you know, young kids really benefit from, I think. And then also, yeah, being able to sort of recycle a toy that has outlived its use for you.
She's internalizing how stuff works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool.
So.
Well, thank you, Jeremiah. And
sure.
We have
videos of each of those three robots that we've already made on V-Rex.
I want to see them.
Okay.
They're all up there. You have to search by now because they were a week or two ago, and we've been posting a lot lately, so they're off the front page and off the sidebar. But if you search for robot, you'll find each of them.
We can put the links in our show notes,
And I just Googled Z-Rex, Z-R-E-S, Z-R-E-C-S, and robots, and it came right up. Yeah. Tell us about Z-Rex. I mean, we've mentioned it many times before. For people who are new to the show, what is Z-Rex?
We are a product review site, primarily. We also do consumer research. We've done a lot of research into bisphenol A in children's products over the last year, which is a story that's really broken just in the last couple weeks as far as getting some...
What's that? Tell us about that, then.
Well, it's a chemical, it's the chemical used in the production of polycarbonate plastic. It's a xenoestrogen. It has estrogenic activity. It interacts with your body in weird ways, and it can cause reproductive problems.
Wow.
And it's in baby bottles.
Yeah, it's in those nice, hard, clear, shiny baby bottles. So right now what's happening is Canada has determined that they're going to ban it.
Good.
Retailers have pulled polycarbonate bottles off the shelves in Canada. The Center for Environmental Study of the Center for Environmental Research or something of risk to human reproduction, I think, something like that, released a study a while ago that said there was some concern for the effects of bisphenol A leaching out of polycarbonate and affecting infants and fetuses and young children. And what happened in the last couple of weeks was the Canada ban, and then another U.S. organization, the National Toxicology Program, announced that they confirmed, they were basically agreeing with that previous center whose name I mangled, saying that there was some concern. Now the FDA is being investigated by Congress for why they approved its use in infant formula cans, which is where you can also find BPA, why they approved it as safe. And they're being asked to reconsider it as a drug. And Congress is moving, there's legislation moving through the Senate or into the Senate to ban it outright in all products for kids under seven. It's really, and you know, TV news picked it up, and so they ran a few big stories and scared a lot of people. And
good.
So
I'm scared.
Well, they tend to run these stories, but not really provide a lot of solutions. So.
You may not want to use plastic baby bottles. Stay tuned to find out why. Film at 11.
Yeah.
So you guys have alternatives on your site.
Oh, yes. There are so many alternatives. There are lots of great alternatives. And more of the companies that have been battling us and people like us for years are going BPA-free. So that's in everybody's future. But the question is how they do it, over what time period, how you know if a product you're actually holding in your hand is BPA-free, because it's still not a very regulated area. And so your best bet is to buy bottles or sippy cups from a company that has a commitment to not using BPA. It's not using polycarbonate in any of their products, and then you know what you're getting.
This stuff is in Nalgene bottles, too. I've heard, is it?
Yes, it is, yes.
So that's why they're starting to worry about Nalgene.
That's what I just told Dan.
Yeah, Nalgene has announced in the U.S. that they are discontinuing polycarbonate.
A lot of people use Nalgene thinking they're safer bottles, at least I do.
And as far as I can tell, these companies, even when they say they're phasing it out, you know, they're basically selling it for the at least the rest of the year. Unless they're stopped from doing so, unless they're prevented from doing so. So
Nalgene,
but they're all phasing it out, and that's great. And Nalgene and Camelback, which is another bottle company,
I use Camelback
adult bottle company. Yeah, well, they've both started.
I was wondering why my breasts were growing. I thought it was just getting. But now
I wasn't going to say anything.
But. Yeah, I mean, holy cow!
But they both came on the scene with a new material. That looks and acts and has basically all the properties of polycarbonate. It's called Triton, which not a lot is known about, but it's say
that's
it's
that's the problem. I mean, you know, 6 months from now, you and I'll be talking and say, there's a little side effect. You get shorter every time you drink from the bottle, you know. But at least you don't have breasts. So I mean,
well, yes, there are a lot of strange and interesting chemicals out there and a lot in plastics, but you know, you go with what you know and you do your best, and getting rid of those old Nalgene bottles is probably a good idea.
Let me just play this. This is the drawing robot, and it's let's see what it sounds like. Is there audio?
Oh, there's not much sound to hear. I don't think.
Okay.
That was me at 5 a.m. shooting a video by myself so that we'd have one for the site. Which is it? The jumping robot has Z and I talking a little bit, and you may hear a little bit, but they're fairly quiet. We're sort of experimenting with them.
You know, this is really cool. I mean, it's drawing right now.
Yeah, it's very cool.
How old is Z again?
3.
She's almost 4. She'll be 4 in August. So she's. I've been calling her
really
3.5 for a while, but it's time to start calling her 4.
So really, I think we now know that, Jeremiah, you're not doing this for her. You're doing this for yourself. This is so cool. I love this.
Yeah, so we're starting to look at garage sales, you know, for cheap little wind-up toys, and you know, it'd be great if, like, when a company recalls some kind of bad product, if the good parts could be harvested for stuff like this.
Good point.
Yeah, because you know, you could make a robot out of Nalgene bottles. Right. It wouldn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jeremiah. ZREC.com. Z-Rex. Z-Recommends.
Yeah, with an S. Yeah, Z-Rex.com.
All right. Thanks, we'll talk to you soon.
Take care,
Jeremiah. Okay, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Don't forget, Prizy, too, is another one of his sites where you can
find. And he writes for Geek Dad also, I think.
And he's yet another father who's making me feel like a complete inadequate loser. First, we got Kevin building, you know, dinosaur bones out of a chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I showed my son that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Henry, we could do this. It'd be fine. I said, yeah, whatever. I got to go play Call of Duty 4. Excuse me. I'm late for an appointment on Xbox Live. So I think you got to get them when they're young.
Right.
Okay. So where were we? We were doing Spin, and we talked about Moleskine.
Yes.
By the way, I found my Moleskine while I was talking.
Can I have it?
Yeah. It's blank. It's empty. It's an unused Moleskine. I love them. But I also looked while he was talking on Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
And the whole thing is a fabrication. It's marketing.
There's no such thing as Moleskine?
They don't exist.
Pronounced Moleskine?
It's Moleskine. It's an Italian company. That's why it's Moleskine.
Oh, okay.
There's no moles involved in the manufacture of Moleskine. And the whole fiction about the French artists using them and famous novelists and stuff. No, not really. No, it's just the marketing guy. It's all marketing. The guy, marketing guy, Moleskine, said, well, there's a certain amount of fiction involved. It's all marketing.
Yeah.
So, because you put a card in here when you get it. It's gone now, I think.
Mm.
With the story of Moleskine.
And then,
it's just hype.
Mm.
It's like, it's like this tea.
Right.
That we just got from, I don't want to say the name of the company.
Okay.
But,
Well, are they sending it to you because they want to advertise on...
Yeah, no, they're sending it to me because they want me to say the name of the company. I don't really want to encourage that. But it's David Prager Tea.
David Prager.
Talk about him. So it's David Prager, who is a producer you and I knew ages ago.
Is he married?
No, he's single. Why are you...
Well, I'm just wondering about what's going on in his life. He's my Flickr friend, so I probably could find out whatever I want. He emails me too.
I love David, and he was a producer at Tech TV, and now he's like a big shot at Revision 3. And he produces many of their shows. He was like the only guy at Revision 3 for a long time. But for some reason, there's a David Prager Tea from this company.
Mm.
And it's called The Man Behind the Green Curtain.
Hmm.
Should we sniff it?
Yeah.
Oh, actually.
Does it smell like Prager?
It smells just like David. No, smell it. You tell me.
Ew. I don't like this.
It smells like pipe tobacco.
It smells chocolatey, sort of.
Yeah. Now, here's where this is Kevin Rose Tea.
Okay.
Who also has a tea named after him. I think Jessica Corbin has a tea named after her, too. That's nice.
Oh, that is minty.
That's minty.
That is mintastic, just as he calls it. Okay, can we move on to save now?
I'm sorry. I was just more. I had more spend.
Okay. Twitter snooze?
Twitter what?
Twitter snooze.
What's that?
This is a little app built by Andrew Parker. It lets you put someone temporarily, that someone you're following, put them on hold. Just to let them snooze if they're like, if people get in those Twitter, mania.
This is something Twitter's needed for a while.
Right. Like if you just, it's like you don't want to cut them off. You want to continue to follow them, but just
they put them in the penalty box for a while.
Yeah, they just snooze them for a little bit.
I love that
This
idea.
Is save time, which time is money.
Time is money.
So, I don't really Twitter that much, but is this something useful?
Yeah, if you Twitter, it is. There's certain people that get just, or there's a conference going on or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't want to kill people forever.
Right.
You just don't want to hear from them for a day or something.
Yeah, so it's a little free app at Twitter Snooze.
SN.com. OOZ.
Mm-hmm. SNOOZE. I was in Chicago this weekend with my best friend from high school, and we were over at friends of hers house, and one of them was a geek, and he was saying something about Twitter. He's like, do you Twitter? And I was like, no, not really.
It's a new thing.
And my friend was like, what is Twittering? And like, we just let it, that sounds dirty. And we just let it go, continue talking a long time. And then, by the end of the weekend, she was like, I think, because she was like, I don't get it. No one gets it
at first.
But like, she called me on the way home, and she was like, I need to Twitter. You know why? Because I just got my hair cut. And that is something that I want. I just suddenly
realized.
I would
like to Twitter that.
I wanted everyone to know that I had just got my hair cut. But
Which is, by the way, the level of discourse on Twitter
most
of the time.
Yeah.
I got my hair cut. I had a waffle.
Twitter snooze.
So those are the people you would snooze.
Right.
By the way, can I tell you, just, now that we're talking, who the number one person on all of Twitter is with
you?
The most followers?
You?
Me.
Is it? It's not Jason Calacanis?
Oh, not even close.
Really? It's you?
It's me.
Awesome.
I just beat some guy named Barack Obama. You know who he is? I don't know who he is. But anyway, I just beat him.
Is it the real Barack Obama?
Yeah.
He must not.
Well, they're clever. When he posts, it doesn't say I or we or me.
Yeah.
It says things like, I'll read you his most recent post. As a matter of fact, let's see what it says. Something like, go to the poll.
Yeah,
it says, getting out the vote. Polls open. Holding the get out the vote events in Indiana today. See, he doesn't say in Indiana today. So I'm sure it's a staffer. It's some, and
it's
nowadays
not, I just got my hair cut.
It's not just, wouldn't that be funny though?
Yeah.
See, that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Especially if he becomes president. See, I don't think McCain would do this, but if Obama became president or Hillary Clinton, because she's on Twitter too.
Yeah.
But you know what? They're users. John Edwards hasn't posted since he was not kicked out of the campaign. It's like, I'm not really into Twitter. I just was there so you would elect me president.
Right.
See, what I want is after, I want them to say, Having a sandwich today with Hillary, trying to decide on VP candidates, that kind of thing. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing that you have the most followers, because first of all, because you didn't Twitter for a long time.
I dropped out.
Yeah. And
because of the confusion.
Didn't Jason Calacanis give away a Mac Air for
people? He tried to give away a Mac Air and some GPSs, and I still beat him.
He couldn't. He tried to give it away. He couldn't give them away.
The deal was if he got to 20,000 followers before Barack Obama did,
he'd give
it away. He didn't. He's now at 23,978 followers, but I'm at 29,290. The real question is, will it be me or Kevin Rose who gets to 30,000 first? Because Kevin's number three, right behind Barack Obama. Now, again, we got in this Twitter conversation.
Right.
That's what happens.
I know.
And all the people are going, is that dirty?
Yeah.
Hello? Hello? They say hello in Spanish.
I think you have the wrong number.
Hello? Can I speak to the office manager?
Yeah. I think you have the wrong number.
Okay.
Sorry. Bye-bye. I don't know. Okay, it's a new studio, and every once in a while, something goes wrong. I don't know what happened there.
Okay, let's get a little, let's go low-tech for a little while, our give.
Couldn't get any more low-tech than this.
Amish friendship bread?
Okay, that's
Have
pretty low-tech.
Have you heard of Amish friendship bread?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because we did it when the kids were little.
Really? Yeah, I brought some in. I brought three bags in. I cannot find the third bag. I think I might have left it at home. The third bag was for you, Colleen. So,
let me show the folks watching at home on twitlive.tv, which is our new video presence, where you can hear things like people call us and say, how do you say hello in Spanish? This is it. That's it. It's in a Ziploc bag.
Right. And usually it's actually a little smaller than that, because you can see that's day one was May 2nd. It just is a starter. And after 5 days...
Oh, so it's grown.
After 5 days you add... It has grown a little bit, but... you add sugar, 1 cup sugar, 1 cup flour.
Did you do that already?
Uh-huh. And 1 cup
milk. Oh, this is nice. So you didn't give me like the bare naked beginnings of this.
No, I didn't.
Should I be mushing it now?
You can mush the bag every day.
It's liquidy though. It's not like dough yet.
No, not yet. And you don't have, it's not like bread, like you need, need it. And there's actually a lot of sugar in this recipe.
No, you know what? That's one of the things I used to do a starter, a sourdough starter. Uh-huh. Actually, it was Italian. It was pan bigio. And you called it the biga. Uh-huh. And I kept it for years. And you keep it in the fridge. Or the freezer, and then you make a batch of bread using it as a yeasty starter. It's pre-yeast days they would do this. Mm-hmm. And then you take a little bit of the dough off. That's your starter for the next time. Mm-hmm. And so you have the sourdough from places like Boudin's is 150 years old, since the 49ers.
Yeah.
And
this
doesn't taste quite like that. This is more of a sugary white bread.
It's more like bread, like zucchini bread is bread, it's
cakey.
Yeah, it's cakey. Mm. And I've actually been lessening the sugar each time I bake it, and it's still good. So then after the 10th
those
day,
Amish people love their sugar.
You split it into four bags. You give three bags away with the instructions, which I'll leave the link on Jumping Monkeys. And I actually printed you out the instructions.
Thank you.
And you give away three, and then you make one for yourself and keep one for yourself, and then you continue to give it away. It's kind of like a low-tech...
Very low-tech, because it says do not refrigerate.
Yeah, that's why it's Amish.
Do not use any type of metal spoon or bowl for mixing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is normal for the batter to rise, bubble, and ferment. But that's what you want, because that
gives
it the
flavor.
Right,
you let the air out of the bag. But yeah, it's unfortunate, because some people have a negative connotation to anything chain letter-ish.
This is like the chain letters of
this
breads.
This is like, like someone's just telling you that you forward this email to 10 people and Bill Gates will give you $1 million. You know, it's not the same thing. And
Bill Gates will not give you $1 million for this bag of dough.
No, he will not.
Of goo.
But
that's cool. I like it. You know what? It's great in a small community like ours. Because it's a way of kind of meeting the neighbors and whatever.
Giving back.
Here, have a bag of dough.
Did you
get yours, Colleen? She's not really a baker, I'm guessing. Do you bake, really? Oh, you are a baker.
She does bake.
Oh, that's neat.
There's one bag. I don't know if that's Dane's or not.
I think that's Dane's. Dane mysteriously left his bag behind.
So maybe Colleen will get
You two can arm wrestle over it.
Yeah.
And we know who'll win that.
Anyway, yummy bread and gives the giving
This is
spirit.
Good. Cinnamon milk... sugar, baking powder, baking soda, vanilla pudding.
Yeah, vanilla pudding mix. And I use butterscotch.
Doesn't sound Amish.
No, you don't think so? I need to find out what's in that pudding mix, because I'd like to maybe
eliminate
that with actual sugar flour.
Pectin.
Because there's monosodium glutamate or something.
Monosodium glutamate in there? Oh, you don't want that.
Yeah, so You don't even know what monosodiumglutamate is.
I know what monosodium glutamate is. Yeah, I know exactly what it is.
It's bad for you.
It's bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's it comes from seaweed, although now you can take any vegetable substance, treat it with lye, and it turns it into MSG. It's put in a lot of foods because it is the fifth, you know, there's sweet, salty, bitter, sour.
Oh, it's MSG.
It's MSG. Mm. Thank you.
Huh.
It's the fifth. It's engine. Sometimes they call it, what do they call it? Japanese Ajinomoto? Engine? Umami, that's the flavor. And it comes in Ajinomoto.
Mm.
And you don't want it.
Right.
Bad for you.
All right. So you know what
umami.
You do want?
You know what has a lot of umami?
What?
Parmesan.
Chocolate?
Parmesan cheese or this luscious chocolate. Mm. Go ahead and have that. That's Cho. T-C-H-O chocolate. You know who started this company?
Who?
Louis Rosetta, the guy who started Wire Magazine.
Wired Magazine?
Yeah. Remember Wired Magazine?
I thought you said Wire Magazine.
Wired Magazine.
Ooh, this looks... good.
He decided there should be really, wait till you taste this, there should be really good chocolate. He calls it the last good drug. TCHO.com.
Oh, that is really good.
We make obsessively good dark chocolate from scratch. We are not remelters.
Mm.
He says places like Godiva.
They're remelters?
They're remelters.
Mm.
They don't really make the chocolate. They remelt.
Did you get this from a chocolate store in town?
No. Oh, I know there's now a chocolate store. No, this was sent to us by Amy Critchett.
No.
Remember Amy?
No.
She used to run the web at Tech TV. Now she lives in Petaluma. Must have been before your time.
Mm-hmm.
And she lives in Petaluma now with her husband, who is the head of Survival Research Labs, SRL, Mark Pauline. Do you know what that is? They
yeah,
build
yeah,
dangerous
they,
robots.
Yeah, yeah, they came to Austin once.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They're very cool.
I saw them. And yeah, I
his workshop is down the street.
Yeah, I only knew that from listening to Twit.
Yeah.
And he's like missing some fingers or something, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From exploding robots. Mm-hmm. So this chocolate is, it's very, very simple. Brown paper bag. It's very, but it's great dark chocolate, don't
yeah,
you think?
Yeah, it is good.
This is Beta Batch. And it's from Ghana, Ghanaian. It's Ghanaian chocolate.
Mm.
So enjoy.
All right.
So
you
we had
talk
tea and chocolate
about,
today.
And want to talk about Audible?
Yeah. As long as we're getting people to spend money, maybe they should spend money on one of our sponsors for a change. We give away all these mentions.
Mm-hmm.
But this one we don't because we believe in Audible and that's why they pay us.
Right.
That didn't come out right.
No. We believe in them, and they also pay us.
Actually, I've been an Audible customer. I don't have a free Audible account. I still pay them.
I pay them, too.
Because, I for 10 years, they've been around. I've been a member for 8.
Mm.
You and I, when we used to commute from Tech TV, and you were very pregnant, I would make you listen to my books on tape.
Mm-hmm.
Except they weren't books on tape.
No, you helped me choose.
They were Audible.
I helped.
You helped
you
me
choose,
choose,
yeah.
And we would listen together? Do you remember what books we listened to?
We listened to that Something About Something in Hot Climates by
that was good. Tom Robbins.
Yeah.
Called Creatures from that was a great book.
Yeah.
Did you like that?
Yeah. And we listened to The Glass Castle or something like that.
One that I didn't like.
Oh,
Three Junes.
Yeah.
We didn't like that so much.
Yeah, we didn't like that. Well, a lot of times we just talked about our jobs and the people that annoyed us. And then we were like, okay, we're not going to talk about anymore.
That's
we're going to just listen to a book.
That's kind of when we started listening to books. Because it was like we were spending the whole time about
Tech
Prager.
TV wouldn't let us. No, it was about Tech TV wouldn't let us do what we wanted to do.
Which we're doing now.
And we were going to leave someday and start our own thing. And then another thing.
Yeah. And there you go. And guess what?
Yeah.
It happened. And now I miss the income. Anyway, Audible has been a friend of ours since those days. I used to drive two and a half hours a day, and boy, I loved Audible. Still do. Now I have to kind of find time. I actually will drive carpool intentionally so I can listen to my Audible books.
Yeah.
We have a deal for you, audible.com/monkeys, if you go to there. Or you want to do Audible Kids. Should we do audiblekids.com?
Yeah, audiblekids.com.
audiblekids.com/jumpingmonkeys. Jumping Monkeys.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, because Audible Kids is their new site just for kids. Easy for kids to navigate, easy for parents to navigate and find.
I love it. It's very clean and very elegant. At the bottom, they have a whole list of free books that you can get from the Reading is Fundamental folks. They have exclusive audio from the great R.L. Stine. They have 99-cent specials. And, of course, recommendations. What's your pick this week?
My pick is Whistle for Willie by Ezra Jack Keats. Do you remember Ezra Jack Keats?
No.
You might even remember him from your own childhood. The Snowy Day is his other book.
You know, it doesn't ring a bell.
He has, it's little picture books, and they're really cute little stories. Whistle for Willie's a little boy learning to whistle.
Oh, neat.
And I remember these from when I was growing up in Manhattan, because he is in the city, too, this little boy. Peter is his name, not Willie.
And it's 99 cents. That's what I love about this.
Mm-hmm.
I think Audible Kids is such a good idea.
Yeah. So you just get a bunch of these on one CD, and then you can entertain your kids forever.
And then they tell you, they say, because they have educators working with them, what age groups this is for.
Mm-hmm.
They give you an idea of, it's got a recommendation feature. So you give you an idea of what, it's kind of like the reviews on the main audible.com, but it's more like a thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah.
It's really, they have the reviews. It's really great.
Yeah.
Audible.
It's a community. It's really,
it's neat. Yeah. Audiblekids.com.
/jumping monkeys.
Mm-hmm. And our recommendation, Whistle for Willie by Ezra Jack Keats. Huh. Mm-hmm. That's really neat. You want to hear a little bit? I can play a little bit.
Okay.
I don't have to.
Sure. Why not?
It's only 99 cents.
Yeah.
People should just go get it. I mean, it's probably not that long.
Well, we don't have to play the whole book. It's not that long.
I'll play a little bit of it.
Okay.
Let's just give you a sense of what it's going to sound like.
Okay.
Oh, how Peter wished he could whistle. He saw a boy playing with his dog. Whenever the boy whistled, the dog ran straight to him.
Sometimes people think, oh, it's a picture book. I want to see the pictures. But the way she was reading, it's very, you can see it.
Yeah. And if you have the book also, then
the kid can listen and turn the pages.
Or if you're listening to it in the car or some other time, if they, all they have to do is read the book 10 or 15 times, which kids do anyway.
And then see it in their head.
Mm-hmm.
They see it in their dreams.
Yeah.
That's our pick for the week. Audiblekids.com/jumping monkeys. We thank Audible so much for their support. I love you, Audible. All right. Now, are you ready for our guest, Dr. Ruth Ann Russo? She's a PhD, a master of public health, and healthcare expert. More than 20 years of experience working in and advising healthcare organizations. And she's got a new book, which we thought would be kind of useful for all of us. 7 Steps to Your Best Possible Healthcare. Hello, Dr. Russo.
We don't call you Dr. Ruth, right?
Correct.
That's a different business entirely.
It's Ruth Ann Russo. She's
definitely different.
Author of 7 Steps to Your Best Possible Healthcare. And we thought we would have you on to talk about how people can get the best kind of healthcare for their family. And also we wanted to touch on some of the new online health, like Google Health and Microsoft Health Vault, and different ways people can use the internet to web chat with their doctors or email their doctor, and how you feel about those kind of
stuff. Seems like the internet has been a revolution in people taking charge of their healthcare. I mean, even going back to WebMD and the Mayo Clinic, just being able to go online and look up that condition that the doctor tells you about.
Right. In many ways, it's been both a blessing and a curse, because there is so much information out there that might not be credible, and you really need to use some criteria to make sure that when you are going on, like you mentioned, WebMD and the Mayo Clinic, certainly the top two, but some folks just, they do a Google search, and they may end up using the first one or two websites that are listed on that search, and they may not actually be accurate or reliable.
Yeah, bacon does not cure cirrhosis of the liver. I found that out myself. I was very disappointed to hear that. No, absolutely, because as with anything, the internet doesn't vet anything. It's everything is there. Do you think the best way to do it is to only go to those well-known, trusted sites like the Mayo Clinic and WebMD?
Well, I think generally that is the best way to go. I mean, certainly those aren't the only two, but anything that's associated with, in general, I would say an academic medical center. So if you can see that there's like something that's coming from Harvard or Partners, which is actually the physician group for Harvard, any of the academic medical centers, those definitely would be good bets.
Berkeley Wellness Letter, things like that. There's really a lot of good material out there. How do doctors feel about this?
Well, actually, to be honest with you, I think that the good doctors, the physicians that are willing to build that really that good relationship with their patients, I think that they are actually almost happy to be dealing with patients that are a little bit more educated.
Yeah.
Patients oftentimes, will bring them an article and have them either explain it further to them or, make a suggestion, that type of thing. I mean, certainly it can be a problem as well, but overall, I think it's more of a positive than a negative.
Most a good physician would say an informed patient is a good thing.
Exactly.
I would expect. I know my physician actually will talk to me, but then he said, now if you want to know more, there's a lot of good information. And he'll give me links. He'll give me sheets of paper that say, here's where to go and stuff like that. I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's empowering for a patient. I mean, in the past, if you your doctor said you have breast cancer, you're kind of on your own. But now you can go to the internet. There are support groups. There's a lot more information. You're not on your own anymore.
That's very true. And, you know, especially with some of the more major illnesses, many large physician groups or hospitals actually have medical mentor systems in place now, where they have individuals that have actually gone through that process, and they can pair you up with these individuals to help you through the process on a more of a sort of a one-to-one level.
Yeah, because not everybody is an internet whiz like Meg Maroney.
So you're a mom. How many kids do you have?
I have two.
And what's been your personal experience with getting health care for them?
Well, my personal experience has been, and in fact, actually, the experience that I've had with my daughter, who now is 21, but several years ago she was diagnosed with epilepsy, and that experience and what we went through in the process is actually the experience that influenced me to write The 7 Steps to Your Best Possible Healthcare. You know, I've worked in healthcare for about 20 years. I've always been in a role where I've been educating physicians, dealing with hospitals. And when you're in the industry, you kind of get the sense that, you know, hey, if something were to happen to me or one of my family members, I would know what to do. And then when you're on the other side, you realize that there aren't an awful lot of challenges, especially when you're dealing with an illness that's not that common. You know, epilepsy is something that affects maybe 2 million people in the entire country. But more importantly, it's a condition for which no one has found a cure, as with most of the neurological conditions. And so we had some significant challenges finding our way from physician to physician. We ended up getting 5 second opinions before we finally decided on a course of treatment. And then we also explored using alternative and Western medicine together. Mm. And so today we actually have physicians from Harvard, NYU, and an acupuncture and oriental medicine group that all work together. They've actually been able to get my daughter to the point where she's been seizure-free for a whole year.
Wow.
That's neat. And that's something that wouldn't have happened without the internet, or at least a lot of support.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and to be honest with you, probably one of the main issues that we had identified for my daughter was this potential hormonal cause for her seizures. And none of the physicians that we were dealing with face-to-face had any suggestions for us. Hmm. And we found the physician, who is a neuroendocrinologist up at Harvard, through the internet, through research that he had done that was published.
Interesting.
And literally wasn't really known by many other people. So that internet, I could say probably, the internet probably saved her life.
Wow.
Yeah. My niece has epilepsy, and she's young. She's only 3, but it's been the same experience for my sister-in-law, just because epilepsy just means that you have seizures, right? It can be caused by a lot of different things. And
correct.
And they've also found that the internet, they found now that she has a very specific kind of Dravet syndrome, and they just recently found the genetic marker, like in the past few years for it. But yeah, the internet has been a great help and support for people that have this specific syndrome for her.
So this is exactly what you're talking about in your book. This is taking control of your health care, becoming responsible for your health care.
Right, exactly. And feeling like when you go to the doctor that you're not, as many people in the past I think have felt, and maybe we could say before the internet, you know, you go to the doctor and it's like you used to be feeling like you were turning over your illness to him or her to manage.
The doctor's God.
Exactly.
And whatever he says goes.
Yeah. And today that's not necessarily the case.
That's what I thought some doctors might not be too happy about. But any good doctor, of course, welcomes that kind of
That's exactly right. And you know, part of the issue here is understanding that if you don't feel comfortable with your physician, then you probably need another physician. And there are many people out there that still are a little, there's some trepidation around them looking for another physician or even feeling like they can leave their current physician. But the more empowered they feel that, you know, you've got that right as a human being to, you know, to choose the right care, the better off we'll all be.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because the internet is not just about information. It might be about finding another physician. It might be about portable records as well. People are able to store their own health records and have access to them now through the internet. I mean, but isn't that what Google and Microsoft are doing, kind of?
Well, correct. I think, you know, Google has a much more established process in place. Microsoft is, from that particular perspective, is fairly behind Google in terms of what they've got available. And, you know, of course, Google is sort of the organization that everybody kind of feels like, you know, they're the hipsters out there and they can do no evil. So they've got a significant advantage in terms of putting the opportunity for us all to have our medical records out there.
People trust Google more than they trust Microsoft. There's something there. There's a statement there. Yeah.
But why does Google want to do this?
Well, you know, that's actually a good question, because if we stop and take a look at some of those issues behind that, there are probably some questions that we need to ask about Google's strategy and the fact that, you know, here they are, probably the only organization out there that has the ability to read significant, you know, hundreds of millions of subscribers' emails. Because they read your email, and they probably don't read it, but they're inserting ads, so we know They've got that power.
They're
they know where you live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, they know what you buy. I mean, they already know so much about us that there's, you know, some potential there to have a little bit of a fear, or sort of the conspiracy theory about, you know, one organization knowing a little bit too much. The one thing that is good, though, that I think everybody needs to be aware of is the fact that in 1999, there was finally, for the first time ever, a federal law passed that provided protections to patients, to all of us, around our health information at the federal level. And that never existed before. In fact, many states never even had that kind of protection that was clearly laid out in a piece of legislation.
Is that HIPAA, or what is
HIPAA,
that?
Exactly. It is HIPAA. Sorry about that. And HIPAA provides for not only a clear explanation of what our rights are, but they also provide for fines for any organization that violates the law itself.
Mm. Yeah, HIPAA was a very comprehensive bill, which talks about privacy. It talks about patients' rights. It's the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act.
Correct. It goes far beyond just patient rights. It goes even into some issues around health insurance, et cetera.
In your sense of it, is it a very beneficial thing? I mean, is HIPAA a good thing?
Oh, I think it definitely is. I think it was definitely needed. Prior to this, organizations could potentially, you know, violate some of our rights. They could refuse to give you your records, there were organizations, healthcare organizations in the past, that would refuse to allow you to look at your patient record, especially if you were, you know, being treated at the time. Now they no longer have that right because you own that information, and it's clearly stated that the patient is the owner of the information in their record.
So the fact that Google is doing this, first of all, they couldn't have really done it probably without HIPAA. They're taking advantage of the opportunity that HIPAA presents to them.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're protected by HIPAA from Google misusing that information.
We absolutely are.
So that's good news.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So through my health insurance, I have Kaiser, like the big one in California, and I could email my doctor and make appointments online, and I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah,
and
it's so wired. Yeah.
It's fantastic, and I love how everything is computerized.
My doctor even answers the email.
My doctor answers it.
I can get a prescription. I could say I need, and he'll write me a prescription. I go to the pharmacy, and it's there.
Yeah, they do it within 24 hours.
It's amazing.
I mean, so is in your experience, do doctors like that, or do they find it a waste of time?
Well, I think it depends on which physicians you're looking at. I think some of the physicians that are in smaller hospitals or smaller towns, my experience has been that they are not as flexible and open to the emailing thing. However, most of the physicians who are in larger cities, and I don't know if that's a metropolitan issue, I'm not sure exactly what's driving that, but you don't find uniformity across the country with the use of email. And organizations that are larger, like a Kaiser, you know, physicians that practice in large groups or that practice in a hospital that's associated with a medical school, I think they are all more prone to use email. And I think, I mean, I hate to sort of say a blanket kind of thing, but if you look at the data out there that is around quality and sort of cutting edge information, those are also the organizations that are ahead of the track in terms of everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You're also, besides a healthcare professional, you're also an attorney.
I am.
So there are legal issues involved here too. I mean, there's certainly from the physician's point of view, there's a lot more that they have to do to protect your privacy. They have a real legal responsibility to do so.
Well, absolutely, and especially in terms of just the simple request of a patient record. You know, before HIPAA, depending on the state, you potentially could be, you know, you could call up your physician, ask them to send their record, to send your record somewhere, or to have somebody come pick them up, and they potentially would do that. Today, there's got to be very clear-cut forms filled out. Everything has to be filed in case there were ever any questions. And they also have to keep a record of everyone who looked at your health information and anyone that received a copy of it.
That's great. So knowing all that, and you've looked at, I'm sure, Microsoft's health records. What's it called?
Health Vault.
Health Vault?
Vault.
Oh, okay.
Vault.
I think that would be a bad name. Health Vault. I don't know, but Health Vault and Google's, what is Google's solution called?
Google Health.
Google Health. You feel like these are well designed and work for patients? Do you have one that you prefer over the other?
Well, I just generally, I would say the Google seems to be a little bit more user-friendly. It's also, from what I can tell, it just seems to be generally more popular, which is consistent just with the market right. presence as well in this particular area.
I mean, Microsoft is pretty new, so we, you know.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any other services similar to this?
There are some smaller ones, but none that I would recommend. And actually, I should say smaller ones. There are literally probably close to 100 different organizations that provide some level of health information management for patients out on the web. The problem with these is, well, first of all, I wouldn't recommend them to anyone in terms of actually putting your health information out there because you just don't know about
right.
the care, the experience, et cetera. But most of them also have very limited storage, limited functions that they fulfill, whereas somebody like Google, you know, pretty much everything. You want a CAT scan downloaded so that your physician can look at that if you give them access to that information. You know, the CAT scan, which is probably a couple of megabytes or gigabytes, whatever, full of data, can easily be stored by these
sure.
guys, whereas, you know, probably nobody else, even Microsoft, has that capability
right.
today.
Google's got plenty of hard drives. So your book is called 7 Steps to Your Best Possible Healthcare. Do you want to kind of go through some of those steps, things that people should be doing?
Sure. And I would say the first step, which is probably the most important step, which is why I put it as the first, is just the basic concept of planning for your health care and how important it is. I talk about, and if we all sort of think about how much planning we do for events like a wedding or a big party or, you know, doing a remodeling of our house and think about how much time and energy and resources are spent in activities like that, and then ask the same question to ourselves, you know, how much time have I spent planning my health care or the health care of my children or my parents? Usually we've spent a lot more time planning the party. And so there are things
that you can do. It's true, isn't it? Sad, but true.
Yeah. And there are things that we all can do that are pretty much painless, but if we do them now, it will actually put us in a better position if and when we have to deal with some of the challenging issues. I mean, some of that is making sure that we have the best possible primary care physician, building our team. You know, who do you want on that team mm-hmm. to make sure they guide you through the best practices for your own health care? And potentially identifying a medical mentor, you know, somebody who can help you at a time when you potentially can't make good decisions on your own. And the last piece of that planning part, which pulls a lot of this together, is the health insurance piece. You know, understanding the ins and outs of your health plan and getting someone at that health plan, identifying a person by name who you are dealing with, or at least you have an ongoing relationship with them, even if you don't have a specific issue at the time, can be invaluable. And also understanding what their advocacy services are, because for pretty much every individual that's out there who might have some issue that might actually have some problems around the payment process, most health plans have an advocate who will work for you. However, most patients aren't aware of that. And so you may actually end up paying a lot more. Because here's the thing with healthcare. You have a lot more rights than you're ever aware of, but nobody will tell you about them. Mm-hmm. You can't expect the hospital to say, oh, by the way, you have the right to request your record, and if you ask for it, we'll give it to you. Nobody will ever say that to mm-hmm. you. You have to just know that to ask the question. Same thing with a health advocate for your health insurance company. You have the right, but unless you ask for it, unless you're proactive on your own, you may never know about that right.
Well, that's really good to know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I had no idea at all.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and hopefully as we all become a little bit more involved in the process, those kinds of things won't be as common as they are today, and then we'll just identify new issues. But I would say the planning piece, and that's what I talk about as the first step. There are other pieces as well. You know, I talk a lot about your medical record, and we've certainly talked about that from an electronic perspective here, but also, you know, the information in it, what to do with it, how to understand it. You know, another right that we have under HIPAA is that we have the right to ask our doctor or the hospital, wherever we receive care, if we don't understand our record, we have the right to have them explain it to us. If it's illegible, we have the right to ask them to rewrite it.
That's not uncommon, actually.
Yeah.
It's not. And as an attorney, I mean, I have actually had patients come to me when they've requested their record and they didn't like the information that was in it and they wanted their physicians. They actually paid legal services for our legal services to have their physician modify information in their record.
But you can do that. You have the legal right to demand that of the physician.
Oh, you absolutely do.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they also have the right that if they believe the information is accurate, to dispute that.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So you may actually end up going to an attorney.
Exactly. So I can tell you that probably the most interesting case I had was where a physician recorded on the patient's record that the patient was obese. And that was the main piece of information, that obese and unkempt.
Unkempt? Now, obese is a medical term. I can get away with that.
Exactly.
Unkempt?
Oh, exactly. My. So this is, you know, an entire significant legal issue over a couple of words. Mm.
Unkempt. How dare you? I'm perfectly kempt. Wow. I take it you won that case.
Yes, we did. That record was modified.
That's pretty appalling. But it's important for insurance purposes and things like that. I mean, that kind of thing on a record could make a difference.
Yeah, it definitely can. Yeah. And you have to make sure that when you're recording information in a patient's record, that it's objective and clinical, and that you're not putting your subjective opinions in there.
Okay. So they're your records. Make sure you know what they are. What else?
I also talk about the quality measures, you know, how to use internet resources to rate the quality of hospitals. And even today, we're starting to be able to access websites that will allow us to rate the quality of our physicians. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, again, not as reliable as the hospital piece. There are about 7 or 8 websites out there that are pretty reliable for hospital to actually rate the quality of your hospitals. I always recommend, if you're using any of them, there's one that's a Joint Commission website, one that's called healthgrades.com, another one that's called hospitalcompare.gov. And if you're using any of them, I always recommend that you use at least 2. Don't just rely on 1. I mean, it's fairly easy enough to access this information, so don't at least 2 and maybe 3 to make sure that you're getting to the best place for you. So the quality piece is extremely important. You know, understanding that you have options in healthcare, which is, you know, one of the steps is understand the people, and that's understanding, number one, how to communicate with your physicians, how to prepare for a visit. We know that the average first-time visit with a physician, physicians are aiming for 16 minutes, and for a follow-up, 8 minutes or less. Mm. So knowing that's the amount of time you have, you really need to be as well prepared as possible with all your questions and all your complaints, so you make sure you get right to the point.
Wow.
So there's a whole litany of communication processes. Also, understanding medical and surgical specialists. There are 256 different medical and surgical specialties today in this country. And trying to understand who does what can be pretty complicated. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you want to use your primary care physician to help you through that process. But again, there are some good web-based resources. ABMS, which is the accreditation, ABMS.org, is the accreditation society for all different medical and surgical specialists. And they have a great resource for patients to take a look at to see if their physicians are board certified. And they explain all the detail of what type of specialty treats what type of condition. So that's another important part of the process. And I also talk about, one of the steps is learning the language. You know, medical terminology may not be something that all of us want to learn, but as a practical matter, all of our clinicians and physicians use medical terminology that many of us don't understand.
Yeah. So, like unkempt.
And, you know, here again is another HIPAA right, which is if your medical team is physician or whoever is speaking in language that you don't understand, you have the right to request that they speak about you or to you in language that you can understand.
I read seafaring novels, the Aubrey Maturin novels, about the 19th century captain and his doctor friend. And the doctor, whenever he's talking in front of a sailor about his condition, they'll lapse into Latin so that the sailor doesn't understand what they're saying, but also feels more confidence because, well, he must be smart because he's speaking
right.
Latin.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's still 200 years later pretty much true. Doctors like to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a right for them to speak something, a language you understand.
Right. Now, what you do need to understand, though, is that I've actually done quite a bit of studying of the language of medical terminology itself. And when you take a look at the terminology that's used, you actually use less time. The physicians and the clinicians use less time when they speak in medical terminology versus English.
That's why you use jargon. Saving. It's just shorthand. That's why you use jargon.
It definitely is. So there is a reason for it. So if you're in an emergent situation, well, obviously it may not be reasonable.
Yeah.
Fix me. You don't have to understand what you're
doing. Save my life or
just
let me understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Not a difficult
choice. We won't make you go through all seven steps. You just make everybody go get the book, Seven Steps to Your Best Possible Healthcare, the Essential Guide for Crafting Your Personal Healthcare Plan. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Ruthann, and you can say, you can recuse yourself on this. But we are in the midst of a political campaign. We've got three potential candidates for president, each of whom has a different healthcare plan. What's your sense of that? Do you have something you like? Is national healthcare a must?
I think to some extent it is, but I think what we all need to understand. I mean, even if you look at the program that's been proposed out there for quite some time by Senator Kennedy, for example, you know, everybody hears the word.
That's a single payer system, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't, because we hear the term universal health care and everybody thinks it means socialized medicine. But if you actually look at the details of it, it's, yes, the government doing a piece of this, but it's also, there would also be private payer. There would also be private plan in place. It just would be less of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, there is some competition. It's still a democratized, not a socialized form of medicine. And, you know, will it be a stretch for us? Will it be, you know, will we go through problems like with any change? Of course we will. But I think the ultimate issue really is that we should not, in this country, in this day and age, or actually ever, we should not have anyone that is wanting for health care.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So many of our citizens are without health care, mostly, and many children, and that's really a crime. That's really a tragedy.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, most states have made up for that with their Medicaid programs now, but the problem is that it's somewhat subpar compared to what could exist if we had a more equitable system across the board.
I just look at our infant mortality rate. I think we're, 28th in the world in infant mortality. We aren't doing a good job, and that to me is a bad indicator for the most developed nation in the world with supposedly the best healthcare system in the world.
Yeah, it definitely
that's
is. And that goes right back to the women, the moms, who don't have health care during pregnancy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, I'm so glad we could talk to you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I should say, Ruthann does a podcast, you know. She's doing her own podcast. If you go to RuthannRusso.com, you've got 10 episodes in the can, and I'm going to start listening to this.
Yeah, I think I did one for each one of the seven steps, planning step I explain in a little bit more detail.
That's great. So you can find that online or at iTunes. And RuthannRusso.com is the website, and the book is available on Amazon.com or directly from the website as well.
Yep, that website's 7stepshealth.com.
Oh, that's another. Okay, I was just going to write
the number 7stepshealth.com.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Dr. Russo.
You're welcome, and thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
What a great subject. Take care.
Bye-bye.
So I wanted to tell people about our phone number.
I can tell them. Do you want to tell them? Or
no, I want you to, because I don't have it memorized.
707. I have it memorized now. 707. Watch. I'm closing my eyes. 9. Just this is how your kids close their eyes. I'm going to put my hand over my eyes. And there's a little hole.
This is our phone number, our Grand Central number. You can call. It's not toll free, but you won't get anybody. You can leave a message. Give us your opinion.
You can hear Megan's really neat hello message.
Right. Yours too.
Yeah. 707-981-4602. It's when we were just starting out, so be nice.
Mm-hmm. So call us. Tell us what you hate. Tell us what you love. Tell us what you want to hear. Give us your tips. Just call to say hi.
I have some calls. Should I play some?
Let's play a call.
All right. Here we go. This is from Downey. Oh, this is going to be a short one. This might not be a good call. Mm. It's only 7 seconds.
Downey, he always calls.
He calls. And it's only 7 seconds, which means he probably hung up. So Portland, Oregon. Here's one from Portland, Oregon. Any second now.
Hey, Leo, Megan, this is Kim. I called last week. I just wanted to call in response to say I'm sorry if I was too aggressive on the phone, and you guys are such diplomats. You handle it so well. I just want to call and clarify that I definitely do not condone teenagers or minors using medical marijuana or any other kind of pot, but I just wish that people would change their stereotypes and not attack people for using it, especially medicinally. And we try to change people's attitudes. Like my 5-year-old boy, we don't hide it from him. We definitely don't use it around him or with him, but we want him to understand what it is and that it's not quite as bad as society is trying to say, and that it has good uses. So thanks so much for the show. Thanks so much for responding. You guys have a good one.
Good. Well, that was nice.
Yeah. Because
I didn't want to leave it on a bad note.
I did listen to that, and it was, you know, we were anti.
I don't want it to sound like we're recommending that behavior.
No.
But I think we're pretty, understanding of tolerant. And certainly there are absolutely medical uses, although again, there's some argument over that as well. Mm-hmm. Although I know many people have used it medically, people who are getting chemo and have mm-hmm. nausea issues, and mm-hmm. it really is effective for them. Mm-hmm. And they may not want to use a stronger drug to cut the nausea, and the marijuana works fine. It brings mm-hmm. their appetite up. So mm-hmm. no, I'm a believer in medicinal marijuana. I'm certainly not knocking that. And I don't want my kids to think it's medicinal for them.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little tired. I need some medicine.
Mother's little helper, as they say. Good. All right.
All right. This is an email from Lee from Tel Aviv, Egypt, who says, Leo, I loved when you said on one show that you wish your teenagers would come sleep in your bed sometimes. I remember that often as I try.
Wait a minute. We should clarify that.
Yes. Yeah, we were talking about co-sleeping. You were wistful.
When they were little.
No one was taking that the wrong way.
But maybe if you just hadn't heard that, and you just heard that, you would think I was... What I'm talking about is I was wistful about the old days when they were little, and they would come and cuddle with us. They had a bad dream or whatever. And my son, who was 13, he's a teenager, the other day had a bad dream.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm scared. Can I sleep with you?
Right.
And we said, sure, because we loved that. It just sounded funny the way you said it. That's
You're right. They say, I remember that often as I try to keep from falling out of bed while my two toddlers are spread out sideways and spread eagle in the middle of our bed between us. Your input helps
me
appreciate a lot of
discomfort. By the way, it says Tel Aviv, Egypt here.
Yeah.
I think it's Israel.
Oh, really?
Huh. I'm pretty sure there's no Tel Aviv in Egypt.
Oh.
It's kind of the opposite.
This next time you visit Egypt, please. What? We are not far. Next time, I get it. Visit Egypt.
I was near Tel Aviv, Israel, when I was in Egypt.
Oh,
that makes
my
sense. There is a difference.
Yeah.
They had a war. They're not really close.
Sorry.
So anyway, no. So she's saying that when her 2 year olds or his 2 year olds mm-hmm. get in bed with them. And are kicking him around.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember how cool it is,
mm-hmm.
right?
And she says, you read a listener mail recommending a program called Beautiful Dorina, which I downloaded and my 3 year old and I love playing with.
That's the drawing program we talked about.
Yeah. Beautiful Dorina. So thanks for the show. Sorry about the Tel Aviv, Egypt.
Thank you, Lee.
Yeah.
No, it's funny. I think that's a whole class of things that when your kids are little, you go, I can't wait till they grow out of this. And then when they do, you go, I wish they wouldn't have grown out of it mm-hmm. so fast. And cuddling is one of them. Mm-hmm. It's a big one. I miss that a lot. You know, mm-hmm. they get to be teenagers very fast.
Yeah.
Don't rush it.
So next time you visit Egypt, go to Tel Aviv.
You know what kills me? I had an invitation to go to Israel, but it overlapped with my trip to Australia. I could have gone mm-hmm. and I was really bummed. I really wanted to go. So ask me next. I guess the Israeli government was bringing bloggers out and podcasters out to see the innovations that were going on in Israel, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know who went? Scoble went.
Oh.
A bunch of my friends went.
Huh.
Sarah Lacey. Hmm. She's not a friend.
No, she's not your friend. Certainly not after what you said about her.
What did I say about her? Did I say mean things about her?
No.
That would have been a little uncomfortable. You're right.
Yeah. You didn't say mean things about her.
Scoble had said worse things about her.
Yeah.
And they went together.
Yeah. So. Well, that's the way these things work, right? Do we have any more calls or should I read an email?
Read another email because I don't trust this short one. I don't think we better use it.
From Susan, she says, many times the focus of your show has been on parenting younger children. So I appreciate your venture into parenting teens. I have two boys, 17 years old and 13 years old, and your show is right on the mark. The opening quote, that was about how, you know, your kids don't say the funniest things. They say the darndest, the meanest things.
Yeah.
That is my life. I plan to share your podcast with my friends who are on parents of teens. I told my sons about Vanessa's website and Twitter. So uncool coming from a parent, but we do the best we can. It makes parenting less of a struggle when you can share strategies and learn from other parents. I try to use every opportunity to talk to my teenagers about what is going on and what is important in their lives. Your show gave me one more opportunity.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's all I have. Do you want to give them our phone number again?
I sure do. I'd love to. We'd love to hear from you. Our Grand Central number, using that Google service, but Grand Central, mm-hmm. which is a free voicemail service, 707-981-4602. Free for us, not free for you, I'm sorry to say. It's a toll-free call to Northern California, 707-981-4602.
It's not a toll-free call.
Did I say
I think
it's not a toll-free call. You're right. It is a toll call to Northern California.
Unless you have free long distance.
Yeah. But it's not an 800 or 866 or any of those. It's just a 707-981-4602. I hope I made that. I just don't want to confuse.
Right.
It could cost you money.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to spend any money, you could record something and email it to
Megan@twit.tv.
That would work.
Yeah.
Go to jumpingmonkeys.com. That's Megan's blog where she has the show notes and all sorts of additional information. Mm-hmm. She writes about her daily life as a mom, a parent, and a caretaker of a ADD podcaster, a.k.a. me. I wasn't too bad this show.
No, you were great. Well, now that we have the video camera up, it's kind of obvious when you're like playing on the computer.
It is. I can't really get away with it. Mm-hmm. That's really a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to watch us do these shows, I should mention that. It might spoil your enjoyment later of the recorded version, so I should also mention that. But we record generally on Thursdays at 1:30 Pacific time, 1:30 in the afternoon. That would be, of course, 4:30 Eastern time. Or if you're in Tel Aviv, I don't know.
Depends on if you're in Tel Aviv, Egypt. Europe, or Tel Aviv, Egypt.
I think it'd be like plus, I don't know, minus,
I don't know.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Plus 11, 12, something like that. Anyway, probably something you couldn't do because it'd be the middle of the night. But, you know, you could. If you were sleepless or you were feeding or whatever, or you were up, you could go to twitlive.tv and watch. It's also on my blog, leoville.com.
Is that free?
It's absolutely free.
Oh, excellent.
And you know, the one we're doing right now, and next week, we still don't have kind of the cameras all set up. It's not all fancy yet. But, I mean, we have a camera, but not multiple cameras. But soon we're going to have multiple cameras. We'll show you the screenshots as we show websites. It's going to get nicer and nicer. Yeah. See that? That's what that does.
Right.
Fancy box. Mm-hmm. And then we have all these cameras. And tomorrow, the lighting guy's going to come in. You see what Abby did? A little mandala for us in the lighting rig.
Beautiful.
Colleen put up this neat lighting rig. And Abby drew, some decorative mandala. Of course, she put her name in it. As all good 16-year-olds, her name is bigger than the design.
Right. All right. Well, I'm going to get back to my kids now.
Oh, it is time. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here, Megan Maroney. Thank you all for listening and watching. For those of you who are watching and chatting with us.
Yes, thank you.
We really appreciate it. And we will see you next time.
On Jumping Monkeys.
Bye-bye.